You do it right by staying on top of knowing when it's time to stain your deck and your fence. Lowe's is here to help you do it right with the supplies you need and the know-how to get it done. Plus, we even help you save. Because now when you buy 1 gallon of Select Valspar exterior stain and sealant, you'll get a second one 50% off via mail-in rebate. Whatever you need to make your outdoors even greater, do it right for less. Start with Lowe's. Offer valid through 7/31. Exclusions apply. See store for details. U.S. only.
It's time for the WWE Week in Review with my co-host Ashley Mann, where we discuss Extreme Rules, Raw, and SmackDown Live. It all starts right after a word from our sponsor.
So do you guys love wrestling? And are you a cord cutter? I have a perfect solution for you. That's Beast TV. Beast TV offers 3,000 plus HD channels and all sports packages. Pay-per-views are only $4 a piece. And if you mention this podcast when you sign up, you'll also get a discount off your first order. All you have to do is email BeastZoneTV@gmail.com. That's BeastZoneTV@gmail.com. You can also check out the website at BeastZoneTV.wixsite.com/BeastZoneTV. That's BeastZoneTV.wixsite.com/BeastZoneTV. Again, to get that discount, you have to email BeastZoneTV@gmail.com. Everything from wrestling to UFC and boxing pay-per-views, it's all there for just $15 a month. Check out The Beast. It's BeastZoneTV@gmail.com. And don't forget to mention this podcast when you send the email, and you'll get a discount off your first order.
Are you looking for a new podcast? Check out the Giant Voices podcast. My friend Carson Jones has on celebrities and entrepreneurs that have worked with huge brands like the NBA, Terrell Owens, and the host has worked with athletes like Arian Foster, Dennis Rodman, and others. Giant Voices has the experts and entertainment factor that will entertain, but also teach you how the world of podcasting works. Check out Giant Voices on Apple, Spotify, or anywhere podcasts can be found.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast. Your place for the most passionate wrestling analysis on the web.
Just turn Roman heel. What is WWE waiting for?
When other wrestling podcasts put you to sleep, you can count on the WWE Podcast to keep you engaged and asking for more.
I've been watching wrestling for over 20 years, and that was one of the best matches I've ever seen.
This is unlike any other wrestling analysis. So without any further delay, let's get the show started right now.
And welcome to the WWE Week in Review. And this week I have Ashley Mann, who's my co-host of the show, and we discuss, my God, everything. I mean, really, everything under the sun, including we even touch on CM Punk at StarCast, and she will be also attending the Raw reunion show from Tampa, Florida next week, which I am super jealous of, that she gets to see all those just massive wrestling stars next week in Tampa. So I'm really looking forward to her analysis from that show and live in-person review from it. So that'll be pretty damn cool. But really, we discuss everything from Extreme Rules to Raw and SmackDown, Kevin Owens' rise to his babyface role using the stunner, Kofi Kingston and Samoa Joe, the Planet's Champions of Daniel Bryan and Rowan losing their tag team championships, and of course, just so much more. I really just love the chemistry I have with all my co-hosts, and this is absolutely no exception. So I'm just super grateful to be able to talk to them about wrestling, vent about wrestling, praise wrestling, and I do a lot of that this week, particularly with the Bray Wyatt introduction attacking Finn Balor, which I thought, and Ashley also thought, was very well done. So, but we'll get to her in just a moment. But first, welcome to the WWE Podcast. Again, this is a podcast by a fan for fans. And you can follow me on Twitter at the WWE Podcast. A huge week in wrestling, huge week for the show, and maybe some more news coming soon. I know I've said that a couple times, but things are moving on one front that I might be able to share with you guys soon. Excited about. And check out the website, too, for the latest on any podcast and any article. Just a new article went up about the NXT UK title this just today I released a podcast, or a article rather, about that, and definitely check it out. Worth a read, very well written by one of my authors and contributors who does an awesome job, and all of them really do. So I'm so thankful for our team here at the WWE Podcast. I wouldn't be able to be what I am, and this show wouldn't be what it is without my co-hosts and contributors and really the listeners. So I just want to thank you guys so much for supporting the show. So let's just get to it. It's a relatively long conversation, as it always is with my co-hosts, but break it up into pieces. If you got stuff going on, stay cool. It's hot as hell, at least where I am, and anybody on the East Coast is just baking this weekend. It's supposed to get over 100 degrees here, which in upstate New York doesn't happen too often. Let me just say that. So stay cool, stay safe, and enjoy the show. As always, I'll talk to you next time, and I will be back Sunday with your Wrestling Nostalgia Show and then start a whole new week of wrestling. So it just keeps on rolling here at the WWE Podcast. So thank you, guys. I'll talk to you next time and enjoy the show. Okay, at this time, I am now welcoming back to the show Ashley Mann, who is a co-host of the WWE Podcast, and looking forward to speaking with her. Always awesome speaking with her. And, you know, we were just talking off the air, Ashley. It's it always seems like in a three-week span, everything seems to change, and this is no exception. So I'm really looking forward to speaking with you. It's awesome to have you back, and hope you're staying cool.
Hey, it's great to be back. Thank you so much for having me. Yeah, this heat is just unreal, man. It was 100-plus degrees here in Virginia. Just unreal. So it's one of those things that you – because, you know, how people are in the winter, they're always like, oh, I can't wait till summer. And then once you're in the summer, it's like, oh, I can't wait until the winter. A lot of people were saying that today. So it's just, it's crazy.
Yeah, it's so true. I mean, look, I love summer, and I am a summer person. But this is a little bit much, even in upstate New York, where y'all laugh at us up here who, you know, think it's hot when it's 80 degrees. We are under some kind of excessive heat warning. I mean, we were discussing this off the air, and it's just people are going nuts, and they're giving us warnings, and check on your neighbors, and don't put your pets outside, all this kind of crazy stuff. But you know what? This is like a very rare occurrence up here, so I'm not going to complain, because in about a month, you'll start to see the weather really cool down up here, and the leaves will start turning by the end of August, early September. So I am not going to be complaining like the rest of New York, but I'm sure down in Virginia, it takes till October to cool down?
Yeah, normally September, you start to feel the change, mid-September time frame. Yeah, definitely, but yeah, it's so crazy. People around here, like, it's funny when you said about the whole heat thing with, you know, you guys complaining like in 80 degrees. It's funny because we do the same thing down here when we get like 2 or 3 inches of snow, like everyone freaks out. And it's funny because one of my friends who used to live down here, who's from New York, she was like, girl, 2 or 3 inches isn't anything. Just imagine being in New York. So it's one of those things.
That's so true. I mean, 2 to 3 inches, honestly, no one even pays attention.
Right. It's just, but down here, like, yeah, School is closed for a week. It's just so dramatic.
That's so crazy. Like, no one would even bat an eye. I don't even think like it's just a non-event. I mean, you have to brush off your car just every morning. That's just the routine. So, all right. Well, speaking of hot things, there's a nice transition for you. WWE right now is, well, I wouldn't say they're on fire, but they certainly have a lot going on. The Raw reunion show next week that kind of got dropped on us out of nowhere, kind of like an RKO. And we'll get to Randy Orton very shortly, too, with his assuming feud with Kofi Kingston heading into SummerSlam. And so, but look, the landscape has completely changed since we last talked. Brock is the new Universal Champion. Bray Wyatt made his debut. Aleister Black is seemingly going to be a dominant figure, at least in the short term. AJ Styles has turned heel. Natalya is also going to be facing Becky Lynch, conveniently, I'm sure, totally coincidentally, in Canada for the the Raw Women's Championship. So, boy, a lot has changed. And honestly, you know, I'm gonna toss this to you, because typically I will choose the topic. How about we just give you the microphone here, and you tell me what you want to talk about first, because honestly, you could start anywhere.
So I think for me, I'm going to start from, I guess, the beginning of the week, per se. So I'm going to start with Extreme Rules and Brock Lesnar cashing in and becoming the Universal Champion again. interesting. A lot of my friends were predicting that he was going to, you know, show up and cash in and all that good stuff. I didn't really think he was going to, just because it was Extreme Rules. It's not one of the bigger pay-per-views. I figured maybe if they're going to do it, they're going to save it for maybe like a SummerSlam or maybe the first SmackDown in October on Fox, or maybe all the way until WrestleMania. So I don't know. I was kind of all over the place with him cashing in, but I definitely didn't expect it to be this past Sunday. And I'm very curious to see what happens with Seth. I know we found out on Monday that he's going to challenge again for the title at SummerSlam, but if he doesn't win, where does he go from there? So I think that's probably my biggest question coming out of this past week for that storyline in and of itself, is just, does Seth win, and is it going to be the hard-fought victory, like no low blow, just a straightforward, like, nice, good match, Seth gets the clean victory and then moves on from there? Or if he loses, where does he go at that point? So what do you think about Seth?
Yeah, I didn't really think past SummerSlam. And I think that it seems as if WWE is building around Seth Rollins right now. So mm-hmm. if I was to guess kind of as an early prediction, I think Seth regains here. I don't think fans want to nor need to see Brock hold that championship hostage longer than he needs to. I know that Brock is the biggest star WWE has, but on his not even part-time but sometime schedule, nobody wants to see the Universal Championship just be castrated and hidden when Brock Lesnar doesn't want to be on TV. It needs to be a prominent championship that is shown every single week. And Seth Rollins, I think, was a very good candidate to hold that championship. And mm-hmm. So I don't know if he does end up losing, like you said, boy, I don't know where he goes from there. You know, maybe he'll try to challenge again, but I just don't see a scenario where he will lose. And I think that he can't really afford to at this point, with him being the focal point of WWE and being that top guy, at least on Raw. Of course, Kevin Owens is starting to creep up the card here in terms of babyface reactions, and we'll get to him later. But yeah, I mean, when Brock cashed in at Extreme Rules, I can't believe I didn't have that in my prediction. I didn't even think of it, which is amazing. I don't know what I was thinking in my prediction show, but I was honestly starting to get kind of bored with Brock Lesnar being teased to cash in. As great as Paul Heyman is and as brilliant as he is, I was just getting bored by the notion of being teased that Brock was there. He's not there. I'm playing mind games. I'm not. The reverse psychology. I just was like, okay, like, well, whenever he cashes in, he'll cash in. I don't really care about these games. And he cashed in. And I'm surprised. The one thing I'm surprised about, though, now that we're on Extreme Rules a bit, is that Seth didn't put up more of a fight. And I said this on a show earlier this week. I understand that Brock was supposed to cash in and win. Fine. He takes the belt from Seth. But yeah, I would have liked to have seen him get a little bit of offense in, or at least kick out of one F5. I understand he just went through a grueling match, but Seth put up next to nothing against Brock Lesnar, and he was standing when Brock got in the ring. You know, he wasn't down and unconscious. So, I don't know, just a little bit of feedback there.
Yeah, and I think that's what concerned me the most, is just that Seth didn't really fight back too much against Brock. Because I'm a big Seth Rollins fan. Like, I think he's, for the Raw brand, he was the best pick to be champion. I think he's obviously very good in the ring. He's very good on the mic. So he's just a really good all-around wrestler and performer. So he's pretty much the perfect person you would want to be your Universal Champion on Raw right now. I get the decision to put it back on Brock in a way. I'm not thrilled about it because, I think Seth should have had it for at least until SummerSlam. But I'm just concerned because since he didn't really get that opportunity to fight back on Sunday, does that maybe diminish him going forward a little bit when we get to SummerSlam, or does he build that momentum and confidence back up on the weeks to that show? So I don't know. I'm just curious to see what happens with him after all this.
Yeah, there's going to be a bit of a rebuilding process for Seth Rollins. And what I really, really liked about Seth Rollins, about what I saw at Extreme Rules anyway, was for the very first time in his career, the fire that he showed, the aggression that he showed, the something that snapped in him when Baron Corbin gave Becky Lynch the End of Days,
That's yes, the Seth Rollins yes. I want. That Same. Really, I've never seen that in his entire career in any feud he's been in, regardless of who his opponent was, regardless of how personal that rivalry was. I've never seen him snap the way that he did on Baron Corbin, and that to me, that spoke volumes. That was like Seth Rollins awakening on the inside.
Yeah, and did you see Baron Corbin's remark right after he did that to Becky, before Seth got up and like started, you know, hammering him?
No.
He said something, and then he said, you know, POS.
Oh.
You know, I'm not going to say it out here.
Well,
yeah.
Right, I did not see that.
There's a clip of him. You can kind of catch it. I think they tried to, once they realized what he was saying, maybe switch the camera angle or whatever at the last second. But one camera shot, you could clearly see it. I didn't make out exactly what he said before that, but once he said that, I was like, oh, wow. And then that's when Seth just got up and just started pounding him. But yeah, so I love that spot. And, you know, everyone says how horrible Baron Corbin is, and he, you know, isn't the best candidate and shouldn't have obviously been fighting to become Universal Champion, but he is the best heel that they had for the most part on Raw. So I'd be curious to see what happens with him going forward as well. Now that things have kind of changed, and I guess we're not going to get any follow up to him hitting the end of days on Becky, between him and Seth. So curious to see where he goes, or if he just takes a break for a few weeks, or what happens with him too.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of a reset button on him too. I mean, maybe he goes away for a little while. And
I think he needs it.
Yeah. I've been saying that for a while. I really enjoy him as a heel, but there's just been no break from him. There's been right. no time for me to just enjoy WWE life without Baron Corbin on my screen multiple times every single week. And maybe that's the point, but... And you could say, well, isn't that the heel's job to make you pissed off? Well, yeah, but then there's the heat of, like, I don't want to see you get your ass kicked. I'm just tired of seeing you on my screen. And it's a turn off to the program. And that's, I think, at times where Baron Corbin is. And I don't want that because he is very talented. He's very good on the mic. He's very dislikable, which is what you want in a heel.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, he just needs even a couple of weeks off. Maybe interject himself back in and mess with another babyface's victory or whatever. I don't care. But, yeah, he just needs a little time off.
Definitely.
All right. Well, I'm going to pick the next topic here, and I'm going to talk about Kevin Owens. I have to talk about Kevin Owens because he was the focal point of SmackDown, and I am so far so good with Kevin Owens. I'm really enjoying what he's doing. It's believable. Is it a little bit jarring and no explanation as to why last week he comes out and just berates Shane McMahon? A little bit. I would have liked to have seen it been built up to that point, a reason behind it, but I'm rolling with it. I'm willing to accept that little bit of a plot hole and just accept the fact that Kevin Owens is babyface, and I believe this is a true babyface turn. I don't think this is one of those faux turns where he's kind of with the New Day, he's entertaining, he's eating a bunch of pancakes, only to have him turn on the babyfaces and make them look like fools. I think this is a true, finally, a babyface turn for Kevin Owens. He's using the stunner. That always helps. Shane has gotten stunned 3 times since he's turned. I'm really enjoying this right now. He's got a little bit of Stone Cold, and that's fine, but I don't want him to be Stone Cold version 2. I want him to be Kevin Owens version 1, and that's the key here is I need him to find his own identity, not just try to rip off Stone Cold's assets and his mannerisms. I want him to be Kevin Owens, and so far I'm liking what I'm seeing. What do you think about this whole Kevin Owens babyface turn?
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. And another thing that I really like about this whole Kevin Owens storyline is that it's completely separate from the title, but yet he's just as strong of a babyface right now as the champion is. So if we ever do get to that point where we see a babyface Kofi Kingston versus a babyface Kevin Owens, it'll make that match even that much bigger and better because we've seen them have two strong storylines and two strong solo paths. And maybe if they ever do meet, I think that'll be a really cool moment and a really great match. So I'm wondering if we ever do get to that point, I'm just hoping they don't turn Kevin back heel maybe like anytime soon or anything like that, just because I think Kevin deserves this run throughout his career, especially on the main roster, because he, you know, he had a few injuries and a few setbacks, but he is such a good performer, just like a Seth Rollins. But to have on the SmackDown brand and to kind of build the show around him. He's just, he generates that emotion and that good and fun feeling in the building. You can see it through the TV, so I can imagine what it's like, you know, actually being there. So I definitely hope they keep Kevin strong going forward and just keep him on the right path this time.
Exactly. That's the key here, is that they have a long-term plan with this and not just a setup to turn him back to heel, which we've seen time after time again. This is a Kevin Owens that I want to see go all out and really give this time to breathe and not just have a short-term vision for this. I need WWE to be fully invested in him as a babyface for 6 to 12 months. Let this grow. Let this happen. Let's see how big he can be. If it's a failed experiment and in 6 to 12 months it's just not working, fine. Right. I mean, maybe consider that. But that's how long it needs to really determine the success or failure of Kevin Owens as a babyface. And I was reading online today that, and you know, from credible sites, that Kevin Owens has been given the freedom to now go off script and cut non-scripted promos.
I
think there is some truth to that. I think that what they're going to be doing is not giving him complete control, but rather the old school way of just, hey, here's your bullet points. You can fill in the blanks and say whatever else you want, but we're going to let you have that latitude to just say what you feel and go out there and just try to just be yourself because it's working. And that's I think he's the perfect guy to do that. And to be honest with you, I think that's the way that promos should just be cut anyway, but they're allowing Kevin Owens to, quote, go off script. And I'm all for it because I think he has a lot of quick wit. He's very very comedic when he wants to be, and he's just a very easy guy to connect with because he looks kind of like the common man.
Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the... Hey, Jamie, it's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to Nationals this year! Sorry, this is pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Let's say you just bought a house. Bad news is, you're one step closer to becoming your parents. You'll proudly mow the lawn. Ask if anybody noticed you mowed the lawn. Tell people to stay off the lawn. Compare it to your neighbor's lawn. And complain about having to mow the lawn again. Good news is, it's easy to bundle home and auto through Progressive and save on your car insurance. Which, of course, will go right into the lawn. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discount not available in all states or situations.
Exactly. And I think what you said about his promo, and I hope that is true, that they're giving him pretty much free reign. And I think that that shows how much the company is trusting him and supporting him and is, you know, in favor of him for them to allow him that type of freedom. And I think between him and Sammy, I think maybe showed signs of that, you know, a few weeks ago on Raw with the whole segment, that electric chair segment thing.
Oh, when he mentioned AEW, yes.
Yeah. So I think we're starting to see more signs of that, and it's really encouraging to see that, just the freedom and at least the opportunity that they're giving certain wrestlers. And, if it fails, then it fails. Like, there's nothing wrong with failing. And I don't know why that's become such a bad thing or like, an appearance, I guess. But it's okay for them to fail, and I don't know. I don't know why they don't think that is right or that it is okay.
I'd rather see a wrestler fail trying to be themselves than succeed trying to remember a script from a writer or Vince McMahon's brain, because it's just so obvious when they're trying to read their lines in their brain that it disconnects you from the storyline because you don't believe what they're saying because you know they don't believe what they're saying.
Right.
So. All right, well, back to a little bit about Extreme Rules with Kevin Owens tying it all together here. He had a very quick match with Dolph Ziggler that ended with a stunner, and he gets the quick win, and Ziggler just continues to get stunned left and right, too, which is fine. I mean, look, yeah. I love the stunner. I think Kevin Owens needs to tweak it a little bit. It's not as smooth as Stone Cold Stunner. He's got a little bit of a movement and working out the kinks to get out. But overall, I'm liking it. Again, it's one of the most famous, if not the most well-known finishing maneuver in pro wrestling history. So I'm fine with it. I'm totally fine with it. But he ends up getting a very quick victory. There's not really much to analyze about that match, but do you think they should have had this match at all? Would you have booked Kevin Owens differently at Extreme Rules or utilized him in a different way?
I think if they were that pressed to have him on the show in some capacity, maybe do something backstage, like maybe have him walking backstage, you know, and they bump into each other or he sees him in catering or in the locker room or whatever, and, you know, they have some type of confrontation, he hits him with a stunner there, you're done. I think they maybe could have done something like that if they were that compelled to get him on, you know, on the screen at in some form for that night, but I don't think the match was really necessary, and, you know, I kind of feel bad for Ziggler. Where do you go from here with him? It's just one of those things, like, you know, I kind of had some hope for him when he came back this past time, but, man, I guess it's kind of downhill from here for him, right?
Yeah, Ziggler is a guy that, I don't know. I mean, he's a guy that is ultra talented in the ring. I would argue he's in the top three performers inside the ring, able to sell. He can sell. There's a difference between selling and registering. He can sell and make you feel. He can make his opponent look like $1 million. He is solid on the mic. The problem is that he is a victim of years and years and years of misbooking, which has done almost irrevocable damage to his character, where you can't really go back to repairing it because you know that even as good as his promo may be, or as authentic as it may come across, or as real as it may be, it's Dolph Ziggler, the man talking, not the character, whatever kind of quasi-shoot promo they want to do with him, you still know at the end of the day he's going to lose. And that's the problem. Right. And they've still kept that philosophy since his return. So honestly, I don't know where they go from here. I don't care how convincing his promos are. I have no reason to believe in Dolph Ziggler at this point in his career. And that's a damn shame because, back when he cashed in against Alberto Del Rio, he could have been something. He could have been. I know I keep going back to that moment, but that's when he could have capitalized. I understand it was a Raw after WrestleMania. The crowds, you know, it's in Bizarro Land. The non-traditional fans, all the crazy, stupid labels WWE likes to give them. But the fans got behind him, and they could have made something of that. And since that point, it's just been a downward trajectory.
Yeah, I mean, I can't really say much more because I agree with you 100%. It's so sad because he is such a solid worker in the ring. And like you said, his selling is just up there. He's probably one of the best doing it today. It's so sad that he is where he is right now. So I hope they figure out what to do with him. And maybe with these new individuals coming in for each brand, you know, hopefully it changes things, but we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, I think he's just kind of the gatekeeper for guys coming in, maybe new guys coming in. He has a program with them, makes them look really good because he can make anybody look good. And then they just kind of move on, and Dolph is just kind of in that mid-card hell. I mean, that's just kind of where he's going to live, and that's, again, a damn shame. But back to Extreme Rules with Kevin Owens on the last note with that piece of our conversation is that if it were up to me, I probably would have booked Kevin Owens to interfere or even the odds in the tag team match with The Undertaker and Roman Reigns once Elias hit Undertaker in the back with the guitar. And I figured, oh, wait, Kevin Owens is coming out. Here comes Kevin Owens.
Yeah.
I was like, that's got to be a perfect opportunity for Kevin to come in, even the odds, because you don't want to make it look like Taker needs help. And even the odds, so the baby faces and heels are now even, and you have a stunner on Shane to even the odds, and Kevin Owens runs through the crowd again. I mean, that's what I was expecting and waiting for, and instead it was just... they ended up winning, and we'll talk about that match next. But I don't know. That's how I would have booked him, and that's how I envisioned it.
Yeah, one of my friends had mentioned that as well. I didn't even think about that until someone else had mentioned it before, and then that would have been the perfect spot for him, honestly. Yeah, you're spot on that one.
I mean, it just, to me, would have been a better use of him than just squashing Dolph Ziggler, which did damage to Ziggler that didn't need to be done, and Kevin Owens would have, I think, gotten a more rebellious type of reaction and got that anti-hero character trait going more had he just come through the crowd, hit a stunner, even the odds, and left. Like, that would have been at least how I would have booked it. But speaking of that tag match, Taker, at least in my opinion, looked the best that he probably has since over the last year or two. Yes, he was buried in the tag match. Roman did a lot of the heavy lifting. But the times where he was in the ring, I think he did pretty damn well for at least his age, what we saw with the Goldberg match. And yes, he had a little bit of a blunder with Shane at the very end, trying to pick him up for the tombstone. That was a little, you know, but a very small fly in the ointment.
But he fixed that right away.
Yeah, he did.
With that look, you know.
Yeah, he did. He did the best he could to cover it. Yeah. And I'm fine with it. I mean, if that's the worst thing that happened, whatever. But that's at least my analysis. And what did you think of the whole match and Taker's performance?
Oh, I was thrilled. I enjoyed it so much. I was really surprised that it went on first too. I wasn't expecting that because I thought that was the main event. I could have just made that up, but I thought I had heard that they were going to go on last. And to see them come on first was different. But it was really cool. It was a really fun start to the show. It was a really good match. And like you said, Undertaker looked amazing. He looked so much better than his match against Goldberg. And of course, it was different conditions and situations for that match. But I was so happy to see him back. That environment is perfect for someone like Undertaker. At this point, a tag match, having Roman, Shane, Drew do the heavy lifting and then have him come in for his spots. It was perfect. And I'm happy to see him doing so well, even at this point. And it's just encouraging for the future for whatever he, you know, continues to do. But I'm wondering now if they end up doing anything with him and Drew going forward, or that was just like a one and done type of thing. But at least to see who's going to, you know, maybe step up and be his opponent at WrestleMania, or if he ends up having a match at SummerSlam, just to see where he goes from this point.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Undertaker can do whatever he wants at this point. I think Drew McIntyre and Undertaker had very limited engagement in that match, if you notice. It was basically a tag match, or two singles matches that just happened to be a tag match. I mean, you had Roman, who was feuding with Drew McIntyre, and Undertaker, who was singling out Shane McMahon, and Shane and Taker ended up getting the majority of the offense in on each other. And so I think that ultimately Drew McIntyre could face Taker, since that interaction was a little bit reduced, or I guess just kind of withheld from the audience is a better word. And he tried at the very end. He was going to put a Claymore kick on Undertaker, and Roman comes in with a spear. And
that was so well done.
Very well done. I mean, the timing on that has to be perfect, and it was perfect timing.
Such a good visual.
It really was. I mean, just great. I mean, you have Drew menacing in the back. Like, you have Undertaker facing the hard camera, and Drew just waiting in the wings to deliver that Claymore kick, which is –
I thought
that.
He was going
to
get him.
I did, too. I really did, too. And the camera work on that was done well because you didn't see Roman. All of – I mean, that ending was very well done. About as good as you possibly could have imagined Undertaker and Roman Reigns in that match. And performance-wise, I don't think you could have asked for anything more with Taker. But if you're going to put a gun in my head, I would say that Taker faces Drew McIntyre. My concern, though, is that Drew McIntyre is losing matches left and right here. And we need – it's really just shocking because – Drew McIntyre teaming with Shane, you think that he would get, you know, victory after victory after victory, and he's done nothing but lose since he
has been reversed. Shane has been winning and winning and winning.
Yeah, it's the opposite, right. I mean, it's the complete opposite of what it should be. And Drew McIntyre should be the focus, and instead it's Shane McMahon, which Kevin Owens very intelligently pointed to in his, quote, shoot promo last week on SmackDown Live. So, yeah, I mean, look, I'm looking forward to WrestleMania with Undertaker. If it's Drew McIntyre, that's fine. They just need to build Drew McIntyre up a little bit more than what he is right now. So, now, what about Kofi Kingston and Samoa Joe? I had a feeling, some quick thoughts here, that Samoa Joe wasn't ever going to win that match. He didn't. He lost clean to Kofi Kingston. Didn't make me happy. I'm ready for a Samoa Joe heel monster run. I'm fearful that it'll never happen. But we got a match that honestly was a bit underwhelming, at least from my expectations. And it just ended in what I think we all feared. Well, at least people that want to see Joe as champion, and Kofi Kingston just overcoming and winning clean.
Yeah, and just the quick finish too. Like, Kofi hit the Trouble in Paradise out of nowhere and 1-2-3 and it was done. I was like, wait, what? Like, I literally had looked down for a quick second, looked back up, and the match was over. I was like, man, okay, like, at least let him kick out of one or something. But I was just like you, I was really disappointed because I'm such a huge fan of Joe. He, again, great on the mic, great in the ring, and deserves a championship run. He is probably the best that on the mic that they have. Wait, is he on SmackDown or is he on Raw, technically?
Does anybody really know at this point? Okay. Really, I mean, honestly.
Okay, but yeah, regardless, he's one of the best that they have on the mic, and I'm fearful, just like you are, that he's just never going to get that run. Would I want to see Kofi lose? Maybe not, but I really wanted to see Joe win, too, so it was a difficult choice for me, but I don't know. I think Joe's one of those characters, too. He just needs to take, like, a break, just go away for a month or two, and then come back, refocus on him, and just let him have that monster push. So, for him, I think he's one of those top guys that I want to have them refocus on.
And maybe, like you just said, time off would be his best friend, because fans have short memories, and for the most part, as Vince McMahon loves to say, oh, nobody remembers that. Well, I think Joe could very easily benefit from even just a month off and just disappearing off the radar. The announcers don't even mention anything about him. He just never existed. And have him come back reinvigorated and just destroy somebody, the champion, whoever that may be at that point, just destroy them, take the belt, cut a kick-ass promo, and then just go on a tear. I mean, that is what Joe should do, because he can talk his way out of anything. And right now, if it weren't for his promo skills and his presence, he would be in the lower to mid card. Because anybody else that was booked the way he's been booked, I mean, the roll-up. How many times has Joe gotten rolled up and surprised and, oh my God, somebody beat me with a roll-up? Which
and he's
WWE.
Such a big guy. Yeah, like, come on.
Come on. Joe is like pushing 300 pounds and Rey Mysterio is a buck 50. And we're supposed to believe that he can hold his shoulders down for 3 seconds if Joe really wants to kick out. Come on. But WWE seems to be kind of a roll up happy right now, and 2 out of 3 falls happy right now. So, but look, Joe, if they don't give him a run, and I say this every single time and I'll say it until it happens, if they don't give him a run, it's criminal. Somebody needs to be locked up if Joe doesn't get a monster heel run as a top champion. I don't care if it's Universal or WWE champion. So that's just my take on it. But on to something better, I think, is, and I know that we're still a little bit on Extreme Rules, but I just have to ask you, what did you think of Bray Wyatt's debut coming in on Raw and going against Finn Balor and hitting the Sister Abigail and then disappearing? What did you think about this?
Dude, I loved it. I loved it so much. I was kind of wondering why Finn was just like celebrating, because he, you know, just lost and he, you know, had a rough few nights. And then all of a sudden when that music had that eerie little twist to it, I was like, no way. And then that, what they did with having him in the middle of the ring, having Finn in the position for the Sister Abigail, the camera work and those flashing lights, those rotating lights, oh, it was perfect. To the point where when we first got that first visual of the mask, I got freaked out. I was like, oh my gosh. And then when the spotlight came on, it was just perfect. Like, I just loved everything about it. At first, I didn't know. I was kind of thinking, like, is it specifically against Finn, or next week is he going to show up and attack someone else? Or at first on Monday, I was thinking maybe he was going to show up on SmackDown as well. You know, he could have been a wild card and just attack someone else. So I didn't know if it was going to be like he just does it to random people type of thing. But if they do go with the Finn storyline, which it looks like they may be doing that, I'm wondering if we get the Demon at SummerSlam or if it's just regular Finn Balor, because I have heard that he wanted to take some time off and they're granting that. So I don't know if it's just going to be regular Finn Balor, the Fiend destroys him and, you know, sends him away for however long he's going to be off for and then comes back. But I love what they did with Bray Wyatt, and I'm so excited to see what they do going forward.
I can't say enough about how awesome it was to see him. And
yes,
you could hear the Long Island crowd like chanting, holy, you know what? I mean,
and real quick, I'm sorry to cut you off, but I was thinking, because it was, I think that happened like around the 9 o'clock hour, at least, you know, Eastern time. And I was thinking, man, there's probably little kids in the audience, like little kids still watching it at home on TV, because especially in the summertime. And I'm thinking, like, and I love scary movies, like horror films, all that good stuff. And when I first saw that mask, I was like, yo, that's really creepy. So I'm wondering if, like, little kids got freaked out about it. But because it was just that, like, stunning with that first visual. It was just incredible.
Look, I'm a 34-year-old guy, and I was still, like, I'm sitting at home going, if that thing ever showed up in my house,
Oh, like, my gosh.
I mean, imagine. Like, it was akin to when I was 14 years old, 13 years old, and I first saw Kane and his mask.
Yes.
His mask was scary enough, and his mask wasn't really intended to be that scary. It was just to cover up the scars from the fire that Undertaker set to his family or whatever, right. Whatever they were doing. And so that was scary enough, and I was 14 years old. Fast forward 20 years, and you present a mask to me that I'm scared of 34. Man, I mean, so that was his mask.
It was insane.
His mask is just, it's so well done. It doesn't look hokey. It doesn't look like he went to, Spirit Halloween and picked it up for $10.
He got it done professionally by one of the top, I don't know his name, but one of the top guys in the film industry who does masks for like all the main thriller and horror films. He got that guy, and he paid him apparently personally to do it for him these previous months when he had been out.
Well, that's an investment that's paying off dividends. I mean,
for sure.
Awesome. And the contacts that he has on his eyes, those yellow kind of creepy demon eye contacts, are awesome.
Mm-hmm.
The makeup around his eyes, all of it, his outfit with the leather jacket, just the whole look, as you said, the lights, everything was just done so well. I mean, it was just awesome. And you only saw him for a glimpse. He didn't overstay his welcome. He hit his finish and he left. And would I like to see him maybe alter his finishing maneuver a bit? Maybe for a complete transformation, but I'm fine with him keeping Sister Abigail, even though she was burned, her soul was burned by Randy Orton, so I don't understand. But hey, I mean, so fine. If he wants to keep his Sister Abigail finish, oh, that's fine.
Maybe it's in tribute of her now.
Yeah, maybe as a tribute, it could be. I mean, sure, at this point, it could be, but that's what I really love. And my prediction is that it probably will be Finn Balor at SummerSlam, the Demon versus the Fiend. So it's like evil versus evil.
Yeah.
So if you're a really religious person, you may not want to watch that match and get highly offended. But look, I'm fine with it. I think what may happen, and if I was booking this, I would have next week Bray Wyatt come out as the co-host, that friendly kind of creepy co-host in his sweater, talking about, Finn Balor in kind of like a condescending, creepy way, as he would in one of his videos. I mean, I want to see the turtleneck Bray Wyatt come out occasionally. I don't know how he's going to balance the Fiend and the sweater wearing kids show, but kind of a quasi horror movie presentation. Like, he said that he can control it. So that tells me he's not always going to be the Fiend, and he'll bring out the Fiend when he needs to. So it'll be interesting to see how he balances that.
Oh, for sure. And I think if anyone can pull it off, Bray Wyatt can pull it off. He's just amazing at he would have been, I think his character when he first debuted on the main roster, that was probably one of their biggest downfalls and biggest misses, was not pushing him and protecting him as best as they could have. So now that he's got this second chance and just entirely different character and these two different personas, I think if anyone can pull this off, he definitely can. And I would love to see, I think he has to, right? He has to come out as normal Bray Wyatt with the sweater and the khakis and all that, and do something, right? That guy has to show up, because it would only make sense. And since that was the main point of the videos that they have been putting out. So I just feel like they have to tie that into it somehow.
They would have to, because yeah. that's how he spent the majority of his time, was as the sweater wearing evil Mr. Rogers. And so I want to see that version of him, because that's what really was the stark difference from the Eater of Worlds. And he comes out, I remember the very first episode, people are tearing it apart. Oh my God, what are they doing to Bray Wyatt? They're destroying him. And people were losing their minds. And then week after week, people started to get extremely intrigued. Like, mm-hmm. Well, what is this? Like, he's going all in with this. Like, what is this about? And he brought me in from day one. I've never been against what Bray Wyatt has done so far. Him paying for that mask, it looks professional. It is professional. I wanted him to debut as at a more top level in a championship match, but fine. Finn Balor is a fine opponent. We've seen this program before, but we haven't seen The Fiend versus The Demon, and WWE loves to make the marquee matches have some kind of gimmick to them. And fine, you want to have The Fiend versus The Demon, great. I think that Bray Wyatt cannot lose, so I don't think that's going to shock anybody to predict 3 weeks out that The Fiend is going to beat The Demon for the very first time, because The Demon, if mistaken, or correct me if I'm mistaken, but I don't think The Demon has ever been defeated. I believe he has a perfect record. Is that correct?
Yep, that's correct.
So this could very well be the end of the streak for the Demon. And so, again, I'm really looking forward to it. The creepy music and Finn's music kind of like fading out and the lights slowly. Oh man, just
that was perfect.
A plus all the way around, and A plus the production, A plus the Bray Wyatt, camera angles, lighting, mask. I mean, you name it. It was just something I popped for. I was, and the crowd was right with me and you, and I think many people at home chanting the holy chants. And so loved it, loved it. All right.
Well, yeah. One more thing we move on about that real quick. I'm sorry. I was just wondering, do you think another reason why maybe he chose Finn Balor was this Fiend and kind of him talking about his past and the videos that we saw? Do you think that maybe he's going back and like getting retribution for people who did him wrong in the past? Like, so he's starting off with Finn. You think maybe he'll go after like Daniel Bryan, Randy Orton, kind of like people that who've beaten him in the past to try to like, you know, take, you know, just like maybe for bragging rights or whatever, or just to go down that path for whatever reason that he comes up with. I was just, because, you know, he did have that feud with Finn. I don't remember how long ago it was now, but I think it abruptly ended because that was around the time when he got, what was it, mumps or something? When they had that breakout, that sickness, maybe a year or so ago. But I was just wondering if you think that maybe they're just like revisiting his past in a way.
I think there is so much to this Bray Wyatt character that it's like layers upon layers, and the promos that he cut week after week from the his set of the creepy children's show. There's so many Easter eggs and nuggets and layers to this that it's almost a full-time job to try to dissect all of it. It could be as simplistic as that. And if it's presented as simplistic as that, I'm on board with it. I don't need this to be overthought, but I also don't want my intelligence insulted. So, yeah, if it's just him going on a vengeance tour, great, fine. But let us know that, or let us clue us into a pattern. Maybe show us previous matches that he's had and maybe why he's attacking this person, and just have Bray Wyatt tell us that he's on a vengeance tour. I mean, I don't care. But yeah, it could very well be that, and I hope it is. The other thing is, too, now that you got me thinking about it, is if WWE thinks that presenting him as a heel is going to work, they have another thing coming. And yeah. Bray Wyatt, and Finn Balor is beloved. He's a workhorse. He's a great performer. He's very likable. He's got a cool demon character. But if they think that Bray Wyatt is going to get booed in any capacity at this point, they are sadly mistaken.
For sure. For sure. And they have to know that there's no one who's going to boo him. There's just no way. Like, people are so excited to see him. And the response that he got this past Monday alone, it was just amazing. And now that people are going to be expecting to see him now that he has physically made his return, it's just going to get bigger and bigger. So they can't, like, try to place him as a heel. It's just not going to work.
It would be a complete disaster if they decide to try to do that.
Like, don't waste your energy trying to do that.
Don't fight it.
Embrace
it. I mean, when is the last time a returning star got a holy chant of that capacity? When is the last time it happened? Maybe when Sting debuted, and when I don't know, it was like a statue or something that they unveiled, and Sting was actually underneath the tarp or something.
Yeah.
Maybe. I think it happened then. But the, you know, those chants, that those two particular words don't happen too often, and it's only done when the fans feel something real. Mm-hmm. It's not done as just kind of like, oh, it's a cool thing to chant, or this is awesome, which is completely overused. That chant is saved for special moments.
Right.
And when they feel something that's real. And so WWE has something here, and they need to make sure that, as you just said, don't waste it. Don't fight it. Paddle upstream. Just go with what the fans are telling you. So my fear, though, is that he's going against Finn Balor, who is a beloved star. But I think he's got a little – Finn Balor is just kind of fading into the abyss right now. I mean, he lost to Samoa Joe, even though he hit the coup de grace and was standing there celebrating like he won the match. As you said, it makes no sense. But it was a setup for Bray. But Finn is a beloved star, and so – my concern is that even though we feel that he should be a babyface and the reaction says he should be a babyface, it's against Finn Balor. So that's my only small concern. He didn't go after a heel.
Same here. I'm right there with you.
All right. Well, I think we've covered Bray Wyatt. I mean, Bray Wyatt is just – I think he's going to be a weekly talking point that is going to fascinate us for every, you know, every single episode of Raw, which I believe he's a Raw star, considering that he debuted on Raw,
yeah.
Even though there was no official draft or notice that he's on Raw, and he didn't show up on SmackDown, so I would assume that Monday Night Raw is his home. So, okay. One thing I also wanted to touch on, wrapping up Extreme Rules, was it can be a couple of things here. I wanted to touch on two things. Bayley and her retaining the SmackDown Women's Championship, which means there was no interference from Sasha Banks, which I actually thought there would be. And we have Aleister Black defeating Cesaro in a pretty dominant fashion, and then in a more dominant fashion the following night on Raw. So, was it SmackDown? I honestly can't remember. SmackDown. So he defeated him even more soundly on SmackDown. So just give me your thoughts on Bayley retaining and where she's headed, and Cesaro, who seems to be the sacrificial lamb for the up-and-coming Aleister Black.
Yeah, I kind of expected Bayley to retain. I figured she was going to get a quick roll of victory or something against like Nikki Cross, and then they're going to attack her after the match. And then I expected Sasha Banks to return as well. I expected Sasha to like run out and like save Bayley or something to that effect. But I'm happy Bayley retained the title. I think if you're going to make a big of a deal as you did when she won the briefcase and cashed in that Money in the Bank, you have to let her have a nice substantial title run. So I hope since that's the one that they chose, that they're going to stick with her and actually build her run and make it mean something. So curious to see where they go with her going forward. But I guess it's going to be Ember Moon, which should be interesting. It was an interesting pick, but I guess we'll get to that later on. But yeah, so we'll see what happens with Bayley and Ember Moon. But what was the other one? Aleister Black, yeah. Ooh, completely drew a blank there. So Aleister Black, I loved his match with Cesaro at Extreme Rules. That was such a great match. To me, I think it was match of the night. It was just solid in-ring work. And then I was excited once I realized we're getting a rematch on SmackDown, but rather disappointed that it was such a quicker match and that Cesaro lost again. I'm not a fan of 50-50 booking, but Cesaro is just one of those gems out there that is such like a rare find. He's so ungodly strong and just amazing at what he can do for his size in the ring. So I really want them to refocus on him and kind of redirect his character going forward and just keep him on Raw, have him be done with Aleister Black and just have his own path on Raw and just be completely done with this now. But it was a great match though.
Yeah, I'll second that. I mean, I'll start kind of backwards here and talk about Aleister Black and Cesaro's Extreme Rules. From a technical standpoint, from a pure wrestling standpoint, that's a wrestling match. That's not a sports entertainment-y match. That's a wrestling. That was like a little bit of a throwback match that it was a nice, you know, it had some grappling. It has a lot of hard physicality. Mm-hmm. You couldn't see through their work. They seemed to gel very well. And I was hoping that this program would go a little bit longer, but as you alluded to, the fact that Aleister beat Cesaro so decisively and quickly on SmackDown tells me that this is just a stepping stone for Aleister and that he is moving on. You know, maybe he'll just be called Black next week because Vince McMahon doesn't like first names. So just a little bit of a heads up for everybody out there. Just like Antonio Cesaro lost his first name, it could be Cesaro versus Black. I mean, really, at this point, the way WWE hates the first names of their wrestlers. But
that they give them.
Yeah, really. I mean, who is it that lost recently?
Mustafa Ali.
Well, yeah, he's just Ali, and then
Andrade.
Andrade, jeez, drew a blank on that. Yeah, so he lost his name. So WWE just has this like weird thing where they just go, nah, that doesn't sound cool, and they just get rid of their sub names or first names or whatever. But again, I really do think that this program could have had more legs and more length, but WWE felt otherwise, and they're clearly just moving on from Cesaro with Aleister Black. But to be honest, I mean, I like Cesaro as an in-ring performer. He is top flight. He would be a guy you would love on your roster. He doesn't cause issues. He's extremely strong. He's a good-looking guy and has marketability. He just doesn't have any kind of personality that's shining through. I don't think he knows how to present who he is with the volume turned up to 11. And now he's gone. So he's gone from like Antonio Cesaro to James Bond to The Bar, which felt forced. And then he's into this like kind of like techno 80s galactic music with like kind of a space suit. I mean, I don't know what he's wearing now. I mean, it's not bad music, it's not bad attire, but I don't know what you are. And you're wearing the bar mouth guard. So I don't know what you are. So the fans are having a hard time relating to him, even though when he gets in the ring, he can go with anybody. So I think that's the disconnect here, is he never has really found his persona, and that's the key, and he's missed that. But Aleister Black is extremely intriguing when he's doing his promos backstage, the way he enunciates words. He's very believable. He's very dark. And WWE clearly has bigger plans for him, and I'm on board for that. It's just a shame that Cesaro was first rather than third or fourth on Aleister Black's ascension here.
Yeah, and it was an interesting choice, too. Like, out of all the wrestlers, they chose Cesaro to be the first sacrificial lamb to Aleister Black. So that was just an interesting choice. I mean, it was a great match, and I'm thankful that we got to see it, but just a weird pick.
I think it's a safe pick. I think that's why WWE went with it, because Cesaro has credibility, but he also can work with anybody, as Ziggler can work with anybody. He's kind of in the same boat Ziggler's in.
True.
He's kind of akin to Zig. He's like the version of Ziggler on SmackDown Live. He wins occasionally. He never wins the big one, and he doesn't have a true personality, so it's hard to get behind him and get attached to him. He's kind of a Ziggler. But I think Aleister Black has big things in his future. I think WWE believes that. I hope that he continues with his backstage segments and, you know, saying that who's next to knock at my door. I like that, and then you just hear somebody knock and you don't know who it is. That's a good hook. I'm behind. I know more about Aleister Black than I do of Cesaro, who's been there, what, 6-7 years? So
very true.
Yeah. I mean, that's the issue with Cesaro. But all right. Well, moving on here to a little bit about the women's division. And, you know, we already talked a little bit about Bayley, and we talked about the kind of weird little program she had with Nikki Cross and Alexa Bliss that has now kind of faded away, and we've moved on. And now, I know I'm jumping around a bit, but this is the way my brain works, is that we are with Bayley and Ember Moon. And the way that she selected her was a bit weird, saying that I want somebody that has charisma, as if that's a qualifying characteristic for a true competitor to be qualified for a championship match. I mean, that was a little weird. I'm not against Ember Moon in this match. The way that they got there doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. Just kind of her indiscriminately choosing Ember Moon to be her challenger for SummerSlam. It's new. It's a new matchup. So that's good in of itself, I guess. But it felt a little bit unearned by Ember Moon, at least since it happened like so quickly. And there was no tournament. There was no number one contendership. It's just Bayley, who happened to be in the ring at the same time as Ember Moon. And, oh, well, you're here. I'll face you at SummerSlam. So kind of a mixed feeling on it. What did you think?
Yeah, it was a very random pick. Because I was trying to think. I don't recall off the top of my head ever seeing them wrestle one-on-one, like, on the main roster. I know they had a match back in NXT, but I don't recall if they ever did anything on the main actual roster, like Raw, SmackDown. So it's just an interesting choice. Like, I don't know. I mean, I guess it's WWE acknowledging that, you know, we want new, fresh matchups, or at least, like, doing something different, or, you know, giving other people opportunities. So I'm not mad about it or down on it. I hope that they actually tried to build up this match, especially for it to be happening at SummerSlam. It's kind of a big deal. It's the second biggest pay-per-view of the year. I guess some people say Royal Rumble maybe the second biggest, but, you know, one of the biggest pay-per-views of the year. So to have that as their second women's match on the show is a big deal. So I just hope that they put effort into the storyline in this match going forward.
And I think that they will. I hope that they do. And I think Bayley has kind of been a little bit vanilla as SmackDown Women's Champion. Like, she's getting a reaction that's just kind of lukewarm because I don't think her character has evolved. I mean, she said she's moved on from the hugs, yet she's coming out with, you know, her I don't know, her Bayley buddies. And then on the back of the LED board, it always says, "I'm a hugger." Well, didn't you just say that you're not one anymore? Yet you're coming out with a sideways ponytail trying to, you know, appeal to the 6-year-old, 7-year-old, 8-year-old girls. And you're not a hugger, but you are. I don't know what you are. And then, yeah, Ember Moon needs a little bit of a kind of a reset too, or at least a little momentum behind her, who has, you know, just a few weeks ago was caught backstage by Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville like reading a book on a storage crate or something. I mean, it's like, well, wait, you're in WWE. You're at a television show and you're backstage reading a book. Like, what are you doing? I mean, so that didn't do her any favors. It was just silly. So Ember Moon could use a little bit of a shot in the arm, too. I think they kind of need each other right now, and they need to just maximize their minutes, make this the best that they possibly can, because they need each other. They need to pull off a very good match. I don't think Ember Moon will win, but I think that it could be a program that elevates both stars if the match is given enough time and the build is done right. That's going to be the key. Maybe they have some scathing promos, and it's not just Ember Moon standing there jumping up and down like a schoolgirl who just won, you know, I don't know, a prize at a play or something. Like, she needs to be more of a star and more confident in herself rather than just going, "Oh, thank you so much, Bayley. Oh my God, you're the best," and leaving. It was just like, come on.
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought that up because I completely forgot about that. But when I first saw it, I was like, what is she doing? Like, she, exactly what you said, she looked like a little schoolgirl. And it was just, like, really weird. Like, you should be confident and, like, not cocky since you're a babyface, but sure of yourself. Like, yeah, I do deserve this. You know, be appreciative and, you know, respectful about it. But, you know, like, have confidence in yourself. And she was just acting like she just won, like, a prize. Like, she was, you know, like a raffle or something. So, just a weird celebration.
Yeah, raffle, yeah. I mean, that's really, it's kind of like that. And I don't want her to feel like that. But
yeah.
On the opposite end, transitioning a little bit here to Natalya and Becky Lynch, Natalya kind of did the opposite, which I loved. Natalya, you know, was like, say, hey, like, yeah, Becky Lynch was saying, you know, we're friends, but you're talking to the champ here. And then Natalya had a scathing promo back to her, talking about her greasy orange hair, all this stuff. And, like, that was a very real interaction. It wasn't Natalya being grateful. It was Natalya at her best that she's been, not standing there backstage with, like, weird cat ears on her head or talking about how much she loves cats and weird stuff like that. It was Natalya being true to her lineage, trying to be a kick-ass female star. Be who you – right. Like, don't just say you're the best there is, best there was, and best there ever will be, and rip off your uncle. Like, try to actually do that and live up to your lineage. And, like, that's what's been missing from Natalya. She's one of the strongest women on the roster, and she hasn't yet had a great run. And I think that while I still, again, I know I'm giving away a little bit of my predictions here, I still don't think she's going to beat Becky Lynch. You know – It's a good program. It's a program that I wasn't really intrigued about when she won, and they instantly made me interested within 2 minutes of their promo.
Definitely, I thought that they were gonna go the Alexa Bliss route. I was really surprised and very, very happy that they didn't, because Natalya deserves it. She's been around for what, 10 years now, maybe not that long, but quite some time, and she deserves this. It's a big event, SummerSlam. They're in Toronto, which is, you know, mighty convenient, but I thought, again, this is another one of those storylines. I hope they really put time and energy into this. And I think all they need is Becky and Natalya to just go out there and just go back and forth at each other. Natalya isn't as strong on the mic as Becky is, obviously, but Natalya can hold her own, especially since she has confidence going forward. She's going to have the home field advantage. She's going to be comfortable. So I have a lot of hope in this storyline and this angle, so I hope that they really put effort into this one as well.
And I think that they will, because Natalya realizes that this opportunity where she has been in the last few years does not come along very often. So for her to be put right. in that spotlight, in that position at this pay-per-view, the second biggest pay-per-view of the year, she needs to bring her A game in every way, regardless of if she's not strong on the mic. She's shown she can be strong on the mic. She just did right. this past week by not reading lines and just speaking from your heart. And that, and at least that's
yeah.
how, yeah, that's how it was perceived anyway.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, that's fine. But yeah, I think what's more interesting to me beyond this, and I'm looking forward to the match, and I think that, you know, Becky Lynch and will be taken to the limit, as WWE likes to say, with everybody taking everybody to the limit, because there's apparently just everybody's on a level playing field. But I think that this could be a very good match. My even more intrigued piece of this match is, how does the crowd react to Becky Lynch when Natalya is in her home country, but Becky Lynch is the people's choice for the women's champion, and she won it at WrestleMania and all this stuff. How do the fans react? Do they get conflicted? Are there dueling chants? Does Becky get booed? How does this work itself out?
Honestly, I hope they boo Becky out of the building. Because Becky is very emotional, and she reacts very well. So I would just love for just that one night just to see a heel Becky just mouthing off back to the fans, because, you know, she would eat it up and they would eat it up. So I think it would just be, I hope we get like a 15-minute match of Becky just going back and forth with the Toronto fans, because I think it'd be so entertaining. Do I think it happens? I don't know. But I think if anything, it'll probably be 50-50 or maybe 60-40. But I hope that they just go after her.
I think
just because Becky yeah. is one of those characters that can react to it properly, you know,
she can, and she's shown she can.
Right.
And the thing is, too, I mean, ultimately, when the chips are down, blood is going to be thicker than water. Now, are the fans all related to Natalya? No, but they have that connection that she's from the same place
yeah,
that they are.
She's one of them.
Yeah, she's one of them. And yes, we love Becky, but she's not one of us. And we want to be a part of history and you know, coronate one of our own and give her a hero's welcome. Mm-hmm. So when the chips are down, I really believe it could be 80-20 or maybe worse. It's a pay-per-view crowd. It's yeah. going to be more of the hardcore audience because it's SummerSlam, mm-hmm. which is a higher price ticket. So you're not going to have a lot of the families and kids there so much. This could be the first time that Becky Lynch has a real strong negative reaction, and I'm very interested to see how that happens. It could just be akin to when The Rock got booed against Hulk Hogan in Toronto, and the fans turned on him that night, and since then he became a heel. It could kind of be that type of reaction, even though that Becky Lynch is the ultimate babyface. Man, I'm super intrigued about the crowd reaction, even more so or as equal to the actual match itself.
Same here.
All right. Well, moving on here, you know, one other thing, too, that I wanted to speak about on the women's side was Liv Morgan. And I don't think we've ever spoken about Liv Morgan on this show, but this past week on SmackDown Live, she faced Charlotte Flair. She lost to Charlotte Flair, as anybody would have expected if you've watched wrestling for any amount of time, like ever. Liv Morgan lost. And then she got and pulled the headset off Corey Graves and said, you know, Charlotte was right. I'm going to be coming back real, whatever. And that, you know, while it's not super intriguing in a big story, it's interesting to note that it looks like she will be going through some kind of character change. Because for the longest time that I can remember, Liv Morgan has been nothing more than just kind of a punching bag for Charlotte and Becky and Ronda Rousey on the road to WrestleMania. I think they lost on a weekly basis, one-on-one, in tag matches, in three-on-threes.
Mm-hmm.
They lost every single week just to put over those three as they headed to the main event of WrestleMania. So Liv Morgan has been overlooked. Liv Morgan has been kind of buried in the shuffle. Up until Kevin Owens mentioned her in his shoot promo last week. So Liv Morgan is going through something real, or she's coming back as something real. What do you think she meant by that?
I have no idea. She, just because besides the whole Riot Squad thing, I don't know even really who she is to be different. Like, what does a different or a real Liv Morgan look like and act like? Because I don't even know what her persona really is. She has the blue tongue and the pinkish hair, but that's really all that I know about her. So I have no idea what a real Liv Morgan looks like, does, acts like, or whatever. But, I'm curious to see. At least they're doing something with her, and I'm happy about that. The only thing that I can say, though, is I hope that they don't continue to do that whole grabbing the headset off the commentator thing, just because it can kind of get old, in my personal opinion. It was cool when Kevin did it the first time. It was all right when Liv did it, but I don't want it to be like a regular thing, like a regular trying to be cool or edgy type thing.
That's fine. It happened a couple of times, but like you said, and plus the fans in attendance have no idea what you're saying.
Right.
It's only for the right. audience at home. So the fans are like, we can't hear you, Liv. Like we don't know what you're saying.
Right.
So there's that too. And, I think you're kind of right here. We don't know what the real Liv Morgan means or is, and I hope Liv Morgan knows what the real Liv Morgan is, because she's going to have to show us, and I don't know if she knows, but I think she is in need of a bit of a character change, because she does kind of look like a bit of a Barbie doll that's, she doesn't look like the strongest individual, so she looks interesting. She's a good-looking girl, I guess, all that. That's great. But we don't know who and what she is. And so she's going to show us the real version of her. And like you said, maybe it will or won't include a purple tongue or a blue tongue or a pink tongue or a yellow tongue. I don't know. Maybe she's just going to change the color of her tongue and that's the real her. I don't know. But we just need to see what that is. It was just an interesting note that she's going to be going through a character change. At least that's the way I interpreted it anyway. So... on a bigger item that I wanted to talk to you about, because I don't believe we've spoken since this happened, is AJ Styles turning heel and becoming the United States champion against Ricochet. So a lot of different layers here. Not only AJ turning heel and reforming the club, because bullets don't exist,
right.
And also becoming United States champion, and this feud with Ricochet that has extended from before the Extreme Rules pay-per-view at the Extreme Rules pay-per-view and seems to be continuing. So what's your thought on this whole situation with AJ Styles?
I think my first question is where are they going with this? Are they looking to have this heel turn as a long-term thing, or is this just against Ricochet and maybe one other opponent and then he's going to turn back? Or I hope that they have long-term plans for him as a heel, because I think he is another one of those Kevin Owens type of guys out there who can be a really good babyface or a really good heel if given the opportunity and the time to do so and to build it up. So I just really hope that they stick with AJ being a heel, because I really enjoy him as a heel, and having the club back together, it gives Gallows and Anderson something to do and gets them on TV and gets them working again, because they're a really good tag team as well. So I'm very hopeful for that trio going forward. Kind of worried about Ricochet, because I don't know what this means. And again, too, if they're really serious about having a heel AJ, you can't have him just lose the title back to Ricochet. But then again, if Ricochet doesn't beat AJ, then so was his first title victory just a fluke? So it's an interesting situation that they're kind of in right now with that storyline.
Yeah, I'm for AJ Styles being heel. Let me just say that up front, because I think it's time that he has a bit of a change. Like, he had a very successful run as a face. That's great. I think it was very successful. I think that you got all the juice out of that squeeze that you could, though, and it was just time for a change. Kind of ripping off Owen Hart's line that enough is enough and it's time for a change. And it was. And so he reforms the club, and now he's this bully that uses the numbers game and has the his cronies of Gallows and Anderson do the dirty work, and he just kind of scoops up the victory. That's all fine and well, and he's the United States champion. Great. But like you said, I don't know what the end game is here. Maybe they don't know what the end game is, and maybe that's half the problem. But I have enjoyed the Ricochet AJ Styles matches. I think they've been extremely visually appealing. They are both crazy athletes, especially Ricochet. I think Ricochet exceeds AJ in the athletic department. I think if you're going to put athleticism only as a criteria for ranking the WWE wrestlers, you would put Ricochet at the very top, because he's just insane. He's absolutely insane in terms of what he can do inside the ring.
It makes it look so easy. Yeah. It's frustrating. It's like, are you serious?
Yeah.
Really, dude?
Seriously. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, I can barely touch my toes when I bend over. I mean, right. No, really. I mean, I'm not obese. I just, like, I'm super unflexible. So right. It's like I'm sitting there, like, feeling bad about myself. And he's doing, like, 720 splashes and, you know, just all this stuff that's superhuman. So, yeah. I mean, it's awesome. And he's just so good in the ring. And honestly, he's got a okay promo from what I've seen so far. He's got a little bit of a charisma to him. We haven't seen truly who he is yet, and that's fine. But WWE clearly is focused on him being a top guy in the next couple of years. And that's good. My concern is that Ricochet and his style of wrestling doesn't have a long shelf life. The way that he performs, while it's crazy and it's just insane and he has counters that you've never seen and nobody's ever done that many flips and all that, and that's wonderful, but my concern is, number one, it's super high risk. I mean, you have the margin for error next to zero, and the bumps that you're putting your body through on a nightly basis are more than you need to. I understand he's using this style to get himself over and to get people to pay attention to him, and now that they are, I think he should scale back a bit and not rely so much on crazy spots and 400 flips and just be concerned about in-ring psychology and telling a story that doesn't involve you throwing your body on the ground 400 times that's going to ultimately pull back from the number of days you're going to be competing in the ring because you're just putting mileage on your body at a crazy rate.
Yeah, one more thing, if you don't mind, about Ricochet. I think he kind of reminds me of a RVD or a singles run Jeff Hardy type of guy, where they're phenomenal in the ring, high flyers, all that good stuff. Just the fans, like all demographics, children, men, women of all ages, like everyone really digs and enjoys their character. But it's going to take a few years of building him up. Up in the mid-card level, like U.S. title, IC title. I think that's the perfect, maybe even tag team titles. I think that's the perfect spot for him right now. But I think he's one of those guys that if you just stick with him for a few years and just really give him a good push and protect him well, he could be a top guy in the future. Because the promo thing will get better with time. He's not horrible, but he's not the best, obviously. But I think that's not an easy fix, but something that you can definitely work on and just get him more comfortable with. Like maybe do more backstage promos first, or just like small interviews or pre-recorders, stuff like that. But I think if they stick with him, they got a really good talent there.
They do, and yeah, the promo thing will come with time. I'm not concerned about it. He seems very comfortable on the mic, at least from what I've seen, you know, backstage with his interviews with Charlie and all that. He just seems like too nice of a guy right now. I need a little bit of an edge from him. I don't need him just kind of being happy-go-lucky. Oh, my God, look, I'm here. It's my dream to be here. Oh, my God, I'm in WWE. I just want to be here. I'm so happy. I need him to just have a little bit more of a depth to him, not so nice. And not that everybody needs to be an anti-hero, but I need a little more depth from him, and that's going to come with time. But right now, he's doing things inside the ring that are catching people's attention. And I look forward to seeing Ricochet. And that, you know, I look forward to seeing his matches, but I don't want him to become a one-trick pony where people are just interested in him because of the things he does in the ring as far as the crazy spots. He needs more than that, not just for longevity and success as a star for the future, but his own health. So, yeah, I mean, his promos will come in time, and I'm not worried about that, honestly, in the least. I think he will be fine in the mic. Given enough time, use the live events that are non-televised to work on that, and he'll be just fine. So another thing that I can't believe I forgot, but I just wrote down because I didn't want to forget, that I wanted to talk with you about, is Daniel Bryan and Rowan.
Oh,
again,
yeah.
Not Eric Rowan, just Rowan.
Just Rowan.
Losing the tag titles at Extreme Rules, and then the follow-up to that really being nothing of Daniel Bryan coming out, and they teased a career-altering announcement from Daniel Bryan. He comes out three times teasing like he's going to talk and pulls the Chris Jericho of 2010 and just says nothing every time he comes out. What's your thoughts on them losing the belts and this, quote, career-altering announcement that we never got from Bryan?
Yeah, I'll go with their loss first. I kind of figured they were going to lose. I thought Heavy Machinery was going to win. I didn't want them to lose. I love Daniel Bryan and Rowan as a tag team. Daniel Bryan is just amazing, obviously. So I thought having him with Rowan and having them be the champions and just have a nice, decent run, I thought it would have been great for Rowan. And for, you know, Bryan as well, just to do something different, not being wasted since he's not in the title scene right now. Just, you know, having something to do actively each week. Now, when I heard it was going to be a career-altering announcement, I was like, oh, man. Like, at first I was concerned. Like, is he injured again? Does he have to retire? Something of that aspect. But then I saw the interview he did after that match. So they actually got me. Like, I was really expecting to hear him come out and make, like, a huge announcement or just go crazy or do something big, and nothing really happened. So I was actually really let down by that.
I was too. I mean, I was thinking, like, okay, well, I didn't think it was an injury-related thing. I didn't think it was another retirement speech. I honestly didn't know what to make of it. And then we got nothing. And maybe that was supposed to piss us off. Like, I was actually angry. I mean, I was sitting there going, like, come on. Like, why am I not getting anything? And maybe that's the reaction I was supposed to have because he's a heel and he didn't give me what he wants. But the promotion was promoting him giving a career-altering announcement, not Daniel Bryan telling us.
Right.
So I was kind of pissed at the promotion for giving us that and then giving nothing. I mean, maybe it was Vince McMahon at the last minute going, you know what, Bryan, I don't know, I'm second-guessing this. We might do something different next week, so just go out there and say nothing. I mean, I wouldn't put it past Vince McMahon to do that. So maybe it was a last-second call of doing that, or maybe this is strategic. And it was supposed to be just pissing off the crowd of not speaking and just coming out there and doing the Chris Jericho routine when he returned, I think it was 2010 or so, when he did the same thing, coming week after week after week and not saying anything. I don't know. But them losing the belts, I was not ready for this. I was, you know, while Heavy Machinery could be champions, I don't think they're ready either. I think Heavy Machinery could benefit by not holding the belts for a long period of time because it would build anticipation for them winning the championships, maybe at a large pay-per-view like Royal Rumble or WrestleMania. I could go all the way to that because they're a special team. Otis is clearly the star of that team, but they have potential in a tag division that is, yes, not the biggest or the most in terms of depth, but they have the presence. They have a good chemistry. They're comedic yet believable and badass at the same time, and not just the butt of a joke. Like, they are legitimate, and I like that too. But I was not ready for Rowan and Bryan to give up the belts. I really was not, especially to New Day, who don't need them. The New Day don't need the belts at this point in their career. The New Day are fine without the belts. I don't know if it's just a story of, well, it's now or never. The New Day can say they held all the gold at one point, or to make sure that, oh, it's good for PR. They're all African Americans. Look, we put all the gold on African American people. It's great for PR and great for promotions and philanthropy or whatever other stuff that they're doing. I mean, I'm sure that honestly played a part too. I'm sure that was part of it, them saying that let's do it while the New Day can hold all the gold and claim they did. But New Day doesn't need the belts. Bryan and Rowan need the belts. And I think they were doing very well as tag team champions. And while they didn't get as much mic time in the last really 3 weeks or so, which I think they needed, they added credibility to the belts in a division that is super thin. And so I was just disappointed. I was hoping that Daniel Bryan and Rowan were going to hold the belts, honestly, through SummerSlam and maybe into the fall. I mean, I was ready for a long run with them as champions because they are just so condescending. Daniel Bryan was doing a great job of being that just super egotistical. I'm better than you because I'm vegan and I care about the earth and you don't. It was great. So I don't know what they were doing. I was ready for them to be champions for a long time. But it's back to the New Day. And I think it's going to stick with New Day for probably the next few months.
Yeah, same here. Real quick, what do you think about Shinsuke winning the title?
Yeah. So I didn't even know, to be honest with you, that was a match on the card. I mean, I don't know if it was added last second.
I think it was. I think they added it that afternoon.
Okay, well then I missed it. So yeah, that was crazy that they just decided to go, oh, wait, you don't have an Intercontinental Championship match. It was just insane that a belt with that much lineage is just forgotten. But Shinsuke winning, I'm fine with it. I think Shinsuke needs a revamp in the worst way, probably more than anybody.
Yeah.
Shinsuke needs a reset button. He needs something. And yes, putting the belt on him is a good start, but I don't want the belt to make him. I need him to make the belt. That's just the old adage that I believe is very true.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't want the belt to be the thing that defines Shinsuke. So I need Shinsuke to give me more. Yes, he's limited in English and he's speaking no English and all that. I need him to give me more on the mic. Maybe give us a rendition of what he did in Japan. Give us, you know, I don't care what they do. Give us like old clips of Shinsuke. Give us a sit down promo with him. Re-educate the fans as to who he is, because he has fallen not off a cliff, but off a cliff into the ocean and then underground. I mean, he has just gone from main eventing WrestleMania to low blow happy to no speak of English to in a tag team with Rusev to the abyss of nowhere and then back to the Intercontinental Championship. So he's kind of risen from the grave, but I need him to give me more, re-educate the fans as to who he is, remind us of what he's done in Japan. You don't have to shy away from another promotion that has not going to impact your business and aren't true competitors to your business in any way. So WWE needs, that's their responsibility to re-energize and remind fans who he is. So him being champion, I'm fine with it. He's clearly going to be feuding with Ali next, who is just this good Samaritan that has superpowers of being able to look at a alcoholic and they just are suddenly cured of their disease. I mean, he's just kind of this superhuman dude who's just this all-American great guy. And I don't know. I mean, I'm fine with it. Again, it's a new matchup, which apparently is WWE's fix for everything, that they think it's just we need new matchups. We've seen this before. They think apparently that's the cure to everything, and it's a small part of what they need to fix, but it is a piece of it. So I'm fine with it because I can see them having very, very good matches together, and that's probably what they saw too when they put these two together. But character development is what I need for both guys here.
Definitely. I think this is a good first matchup for Shinsuke. Like you said, I don't see Shinsuke losing the title here. I think Ali is one of those characters that you can hold off for a while, having him on the main roster before giving him a title. And just keep doing what you're doing with him. The video packages, you know, at least it's different. He's doing it himself. At least we're hearing from him, and at least we know his purpose. So I am a fan of Ali. He's really good in the ring. I think they're going to have a really good match. But I just hope that they, like we've said about many other wrestlers tonight, I think that they really need to focus on Shinsuke, rebuild him, and just go all out with him, because he is such a good get for them, and I think that they just really need to believe in him. He needs to put forth the effort, and they just need to meet on common grounds and then just agree on what they're doing with this character and the direction, and just go all out for it.
And I agree with what you said, but I think, too, that they need to not just rely so heavily on his entrance to get him over.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
Because I think that was one of the faults with WWE's presentation of him in the first go-around was, oh, he's a rock star. He's
like
a rock star. He's
a
rock
Robert
star.
Rude.
Yeah. I mean, look at it. Robert Roode is a one-trick pony, too. He's a one-word entrance one-trick pony. That's what he is, and it's unfortunate. I mean, look, Bobby Roode, outside of the word glorious and outside of his entrance, has nothing. He is wrestler A. I mean, that's how generic
he is. He doesn't even have the mustache anymore. He has a full beard.
Yeah. I mean, at least the mustache, whether you like mustaches or not, was something that differentiated him
right.
from the roster. Yeah. I mean, like, so, I mean, bring back the stash. I mean, hashtag bring back the stash. I mean, I'll start the trend.
Yeah.
But yes, Shinsuke needs something beyond his entrance. Even if they go back to his old entrance and don't give him the kind of abbreviated heel version of his music that he has now, as good as his entrance is, and his entrance is amazing, his music sticks in my head all day, and
oh, yeah.
it's great, but it's very superficial. Like, entrances are great, and you need a great entrance to, I think, be great in WWE, but he hasn't put it all together, and WWE hasn't put it all together yet. And I need Shinsuke Nakamura to give us the character development, give us your backstory, sit down with an interview, give us a video package, do something and remind us week after week of what you've done and where you are and what you want to do. Give us a mission statement. Don't just give us these one-liners. I think this week he said that he's a storm in a bottle and the glass is broken and now the chaos can rain down or something like that. Very generic. Yeah. I mean, like, I don't even know what that means. Like, okay, you're just going to be – you're going to just rain chaos? Like, I don't know what that means. I mean, anybody could say that. I mean, that's just a generic statement. Outside of his very, very heavy accent, there's not much different about that material of the promo. So I don't know. I think Shinsuke has a chance here as Intercontinental Champion. I hope he's not a transitional champion. I hope this is a long-term something with Shinsuke.
Me too.
Speaking of SmackDown Live, I know we've jumped everywhere, but again, that's just what we do with wrestling talk, is Kofi and Randy Orton. And yes, this was six-man tag, but it looks like Randy Orton is going to be positioned to face Kofi Kingston at SummerSlam. At least it's not official, but that looks like where they're headed. And Randy Orton hit the RKO out of nowhere and got the three count. And what I like here is, one, the RKO is very protected. What I mean by that is he never or very rarely do opponents kick out of the RKO. That's a very rare thing nowadays in a time and age where finishers are kicked out of on a weekly basis. The RKO has stood the test of time, and very few opponents kick out of the RKO. So I like that. And Randy Orton being a heel, fine. I'm fine with that too. Randy Orton has gone on record many a times saying he likes being a heel versus a face. Even though the RKO, as nasty of a heel as Randy Orton may be and as successful as he may be at getting boos, when he hits the RKO, people pop. I mean, there's just nothing you can do about it. The RKO has took on a life of its own. First of all, you know, before I keep going on it myself and rambling, what do you think about Randy Orton and Kofi Kingston at SummerSlam?
I'm all for it. I'm looking forward to this match very much. I think they have so much story already built up between them from their past matches. And I think, I want to say 10 years ago. Maybe that's not quite that long ago. But some years ago, the whole Randy Orton calling Kofi Kingston stupid in the ring and that whole ordeal, they just have so much that they can build off of between the two of them, between now and SummerSlam. So I'm very excited to see what they do with their story going forward. But I think it's going to be a great match, and it gives Kofi that legend opponent that he needs. I think they need to have Kofi Kingston pin Randy Orton 1-2-3 clean in the middle of the ring, no question about it, just to further establish his reign. Because then the next one you can go back to like maybe a lower status guy, but he definitely needed an opponent like a Randy Orton, especially at a very big pay-per-view like a SummerSlam.
He does, and I think these two are going to have a very good match. I think the effort would be there on Kofi's end. The question is just, will the effort be there on Randy's end, who just continues to pump out good matches, just good matches, because he's so good that he doesn't have to even try to be good in when he's in the ring. That, I mean, Randy Orton is so talented, that's how good he is, that he doesn't have to try. But what I'd like to see is a motivated Randy Orton in this match to help put over Kofi. And while in the past I've kind of been discouraged that he will be able to do that or would do that, because Randy Orton's all about longevity and trying to make his career as long as possible and not putting his body through hell, which I understand and respect. But Kofi Kingston and Randy Orton are really good friends in real life. So I think there's a little bit of extra motivation for Randy Orton to put in that extra effort that would not otherwise be there if it was just, you know, wrestler A or wrestler B that was holding the WWE Championship. While Randy Orton probably won't win, I don't think he should, because Randy Orton is just kind of there. He's that cool legacy star. He gets the good reactions. He's one of the biggest stars WWE has, but he's never, ever really there as a true threat to a championship, because it's just not in the cards for them to build around Randy Orton, who is on the back end of his prime and not the future of WWE. So I think that Kofi Kingston needs to be the focus. I think he will be the focus. I think you will see probably a kick out of the RKO. You're going to see crazy spots in terms of probably an RKO. There's going to be an RKO out of nowhere. It could be him coming off the top or whatever. Somehow a Trouble in Paradise turned into an RKO, or I don't know. I mean, it's going to be, I think, a very smooth, a very exciting, and probably for the first time in a long time, motivated Randy Orton match.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this match so much. And like you said, that you made a really good point about Randy Orton being motivated. I think he will be for this one. of course, being SummerSlam, the level and the location, all that good stuff already in play. And then, like you said, them being friends on the outside and Randy Orton really wanting to do this for Kofi. I think it's going to be a great match, and I hope they keep it on Kofi. I don't see Randy Orton winning, like you said, either, but I think it's going to be a really good, solid match. So I'm very much looking forward to it.
And we can't end the conversation. Again, this is just the end of my bullets. If there's anything else that you want to discuss, absolutely, you know, let me know. But the end of my bullets has the three numbers of 2, 4, and 7. So I can't not have a conversation with you without discussing the 24/7 championship, the preposterous, just flamboyant, crazy, wacky, creative that is the 24/7 championship. And there's, you know, there's a lot of ways to look at this, and you know, we've discussed it before. But it just continues to get wackier and wackier with Drake Maverick and R-Truth, who, honestly, like, as stupid as some of the storylines may be, and you have to just completely turn your brain off to a level that's almost zombified of not thinking about the fact that there's a camera, a large piece of, you know, thousands of dollars worth of equipment in a room in which you're about to consummate your marriage with your wife. You're supposed to just turn that off. And you know what? I just do, because it's just not worth even ranting about because of the just craziness of this this whole story. But so you turn your brain off and you look at this, and you have, I think, two guys that gel very well together. They both do comedy very well, and comedy is very hard to do. R-Truth has always nailed it. Drake Maverick is starting to come into his own of being the 24/7 champion, although has now lost it on the bed of which he was supposed to consummate his marriage with. He lost the 24/7 championship back to R-Truth. And so I'm enjoying it if I just turn my brain off and go, this is supposed to be stupid. Will it reach a level that it's just so stupid I can't even watch it as a human being? Maybe. I mean, we're not far away. But before I continue, what do you think about this whole craziness that is the 24/7 championship that's really focused around two men and Drake Maverick, or Hornswoggle, and R-Truth?
And first of all, I love it. It's so entertaining. And like you said, it is one of those things where you just put no thought into it. Just sit there and enjoy and just take it for what it is. It's so absurd and just so crazy. Like, of course, none of it makes sense. Like, if you really, like, broke down, like, bit by bit, like, none of it would make sense. And I think, for me, that's the best part about it, just because, like, there's nothing really at stake. It's a 24/7 title. Like, it's a big green title with a gold plates. Like, you know, it's absurd, and that's the whole point of it. And I think it's great. R-Truth and Drake Maverick are the two best individuals that could be fighting for this title right now. And with the Raw reunion coming up, I hope Santino Marella gets involved somehow, some way. Like, he has to.
Yes. Oh my god, he would be the
and Hornswoggle. Like, what if, like, they just both pop
actual
up?
Actual Hornswoggle.
The actual, yes. Hornswoggle. Like, it would be perfect. So I just I think it's like WWE's gift to us right now. Like, they're just that gift that you didn't think you really wanted with that one toy, but you open up and start playing with it, and it's like the best toy that you got that whole day. So that's the way I view it. It's just, it's stupid, but it's a fun stupid. Like, it's nothing, you know?
It is. And, you know, I spend so much time breaking down storylines that don't make sense and camera angles that don't make sense. And there happens to be a camera somewhere that there would never, ever be a camera. And I have to remind myself that, like, look, 95% of the show should be up to that standard, but when it comes to this particular piece of the show, it's like a subset of the show, and I'm not going to criticize it for that because it's not meant to be broken down like that, or you will take the fun out of it. And so that's fine. I'm with the WWE on the ride that is this crazy, insane storylines of just impossibility and just totally unrealistic stories of 24/7 championship. But you know what? Like you said, it's so stupid that it's good, and that, I think, is ultimately what they're going for. And they have unlimited creative to go with this. Like, there are no limits. There is unlimited amount of situations you could do with this. The insanity with this is just, I don't think even has scratched the surface as far as what they could do with it. Now, what the shelf life is of this before the fans get bored of it or start to turn on it, I think remains to be seen. I think fans are still on board because of just how ridiculous this is compared to the rest of the show. But yeah, like, I'm fine with it. Him and Drake Maverick have very good chemistry. But if you're right and they bring in Santino Marella for this, I will lose my mind.
Yes.
Like, you will hear me up in Albany, New York, like, just like losing my mind while you're in Tampa, Florida next week. And it would be perfect. Santino Marella was one of my favorites for comedy. Like, when he got eliminated from the Royal Rumble, I forget what year, in record time, beating the Warlord's record, and he's like, oh, I wasn't ready. Like,
with just, his unibrow.
Oh my god, just, he had really, really good timing. Even when he was, had a very short program with Stone Cold Steve Austin, and he was crapping on the movie that Stone Cold did. It was called, The Departed. It was that island that Stone Cold was on in the movie.
Oh my gosh.
Whatever that was. It's fleeting me. But the movie that he did, and Santino was just crapping all over it, and he put it on the ground and stomped on it and put it out like a cigarette. And he said that tonight there's not going to be a glass breaking. Like, the words that he would say, and Stone Cold comes out and gives him a stunner. I mean, some of the stuff Santino's
done. And
him
and Beth, like, how Beth would always put him on her shoulders, like, just every little thing. So great.
I mean, Santino was one of my favorites with the comedy side of it. So, oh my god, if that happens, I mean, it makes total sense. It makes total sense that that could happen. I mean, even if Santino's only there for the night, you could have him lose it again at the end of the night. I mean, you could get it back to R-Truth or Drake Maverick.
You could even film him losing it later that night and then air it like 2 weeks out. You know,
oh my god, see, now you got me all excited. You got me all excited because Santino was one of the names mentioned in the Raw reunion very quickly. I was like, what do you mean? Like, some of the biggest stars in Raw history. I'm like, why the hell is Santino's name on here? Like, I mean, he cannot possibly be one of the biggest names in Raw history, but fine. Like, I would love to see Santino again. So I'm on board for that 1,000%. So now I'm all ramped up about it. But so those are the end of my bullet points. Ashley, did you have anything that you wanted to bring up and discuss?
No, I don't think so. I think that was everything. There was one thing. I'm sorry. There was one thing. So it was just mentioned today, and I know this is a dirty podcast, but it kind of ties in. Did you see the announcement that CM Punk will be at StarCast this year?
I did see that. I very briefly saw that before I went on the air with you. And yeah, so I honestly don't know what to think about that yet. I'm still gathering my thoughts.
And they made a whole video. Well, I mean, it was only a minute long, but it was just the cult personality theme song, like the beginning parts of it, that reporter or the guy on the TV station, that muffled, you know, announcer playing, and it was like them zooming in on the world, and then it just a visual of the city of Chicago, and then just like CM Punk just appearing up out of nowhere.
Wow. All right.
It was about a minute long. You definitely got to check it out. It was very well done, but seeing the video, because I'm pretty sure he appeared at All In, it was for like an autograph signing, but for them to do like a video this time, like, who produced the video, you know, because Conrad runs StarCast and he's not gonna, you know, produce something like that just for one guy, because and why would he choose CM Punk out of the multiple people he has already, you know? So it's just interesting.
Yeah, I mean, look, CM Punk could be the top guy in any wrestling promotion the day that he debuts. Mm-hmm. I mean, yes, this is StarCast, so it's not like a promotion. It's not like AEW whatever. But CM Punk returning would rock the internet to the point where it might break. He would, and I can't wait because I think it will happen. I know that that wasn't your question here, but so I will check out the video. But the thought of CM Punk returning to a wrestling promotion, yes, WWE would actually be where I'd want to see him in a very short term, maybe for just like a WrestleMania match or something, because I think that ultimately CM Punk would not be happy again in WWE. But for him to return, it would just be, oh my god, like, I would lose my mind. I think the entire internet wrestling community would lose their mind, but... appearing in StarCast, if I'm not mistaken, I mean, that would be the first significant wrestling event. It's, what, a four-day wrestling event at StarCast? And, taking place in Chicago on Labor Day. Wow. Okay, so now I'm gonna watch this video the moment that we get off this the show.
Yeah, definitely check it out. And like I said, it was only about a minute long, so it wasn't anything too crazy, but it was short, sweet. It got right to the point, and it was just so well produced. It kind of reminded me of the, sorry, my dog just ran by me. It kind of reminded me of the John Moxley video. Not too long, very well produced, completely different, but the production level. Because, again, everyone was wondering who produced that video because it was so well done. For me personally, I haven't read anything. It's just me speculating 100%. But who produced the video and why did CM Punk have a video? You have right. Sting being there. You have Jerry Lawler, Ric Flair, everyone. And the only person you make a video for is CM Punk. So, just, I mean, you know, I don't want to, you know, start anything. But it was just very, very interesting. And he was right. Like, the second day they put that tweet out, he was retweeting it, interacting with the fans and everything. So it's just very, very interesting. And it would affect WWE, so we'll see how this plays out.
Yeah, it would, and I think, you know, people have speculated, well, Shane McMahon using the best in the world moniker and tagline is WWE hinting that CM Punk's coming back. I don't think that's the case. I really just think it's Shane McMahon just being obnoxious. If CM Punk's music were ever to hit after Shane McMahon comes out and does that, like, could you, like, just think about that, especially if it took place in Chicago or a big market like New York City. Like, the reaction, like, I get goosebumps thinking about.
Me too.
Just thinking about Shane McMahon coming out and cutting one of his promos and talking about him being the best in the world, coming out, even bringing the stupid crown jewel best in the world trophy with him, and all of that. Like, and you know, you just are like, why the hell is Shane out here talking about this? And then you hear CM Punk's music hit. Like, people would lose, like, I would lose my mind. I mean, it would just be a perfect setup, but I just don't think that's the intention behind Shane McMahon using that phrase.
No, no, I don't either. I think it was just a happy coincidence, honestly. I think they probably didn't even realize it at first until probably like a Triple H was like, hey, you know, that's what CM Punk used to call himself. And at that point, it was too late. So I think,
well, so did
you
Chris
know.
Jericho, really. Yeah. I mean, Chris Jericho, yeah. Oh, one other thing, too, that I want to discuss with you, well, really quickly, just your thoughts on AEW at, what was it? Not Double or Nothing, but the pay-per-view after that. It was a Fighter Fest that they had. Fighter Fest, where Sean Spears hit Cody Rhodes in the head with a chair. I don't think we discussed this, did we?
No, we didn't.
I just wanted your thoughts. See how much happens in 3 weeks?
It's crazy.
What were your thoughts? Because I've already given mine very explicitly.
Yeah.
What were your thoughts on that chair shot, the head to the head, in a very nasty but very, I think, worked at the same time, even though Cody bled. What were your thoughts on that whole deal?
You know, it's one of those subjects. I think it's crazy. I'm not 100% against it. Do I want to see it happen every match every week? Absolutely not. I think on rare occasion, and if you have two solid professionals doing it, and they said the chair was gimmicked, you know, hopefully it was. And what happened, the main thing that got people, well, one of the main points about it that got people talking was him getting sliced open in the back, and that was because Cody turned his head. From what I've heard, I'm obviously not an expert. I've never even had to think about getting hit in the head with the chair, so I don't know how it all works, but they say you're not supposed to turn your head. If you're going to get hit in the head with the chair, you're supposed to just take it face on, which sounds crazy, but that's what some people have been saying. So they said that's why it sliced open the back of his head, and he had to get all those staples and everything, which was just a sick visual. I mean, you know, what are you going to do? If it happens once every now and then, fine, but it's one of those things where it's like, it's some people compare it to smoking cigarettes. They're like, oh, well, you know it's going to kill you, but you choose to do it anyway. They compare, and now this is extreme, you know, they compare, oh, well, he knows, you know, the possible repercussions of the CTE and everything like that, but they're choosing to do it anyway. That's irresponsible. It's just one of those things. If they're going to do it, just be as safe as possible, you know, and don't do it repeatedly, because it's that one chair shot was enough to strike all this emotion and commentary on it and interest in it. So you don't need to do it a lot, just maybe once a year, if that. So we'll see. I think people kind of blew it up more than they needed to. But yeah, so we'll see.
Yeah. All right. Well, you know, I'm just curious because people were crazy over this, and I understand CTE is a big deal, and I don't want any wrestler ever getting a concussion for any reason, much less a one that could easily be prevented by not taking a chair
for sure.
Much less the ones that happen by accident. So, but at the same time, I completely appreciate the balls of AEW and Cody Rhodes to go there. And he knew that this would create a ton of buzz and buzz around your company. And you would say, well, do you want this kind of buzz? As Vince McMahon would say, any controversy is good controversy because it creates, as Eric Bischoff said, controversy creates cash. It's true. So even if it's not great publicity, it still has people going, whoa, what the hell is this promotion doing? I didn't even know there was AEW. What is AEW? And boom, the next thing you know, you have people checking out your product.
Exactly.
So smart business decision, one that I don't think anybody saw coming. CTE worth it? No, he didn't get a concussion. The chair was as worked as it could have been because you see it was like almost pre-dented or it's a thinner version of the steel, whatever it may be. But my argument to that is, yes, he got cut open because the back of the actual rounded seat portion hit him in the back of the head. As you said, there's a better way to take the chair shot. And I've said this, and I'll say it again. If you believe that that was a true, untouched steel chair, go to your local hardware store.
Right.
Go to the section that sells steel chairs.
Solid.
They are super heavy. And I don't care how hard
you
hit a human skull with that chair, it would not bend. It might make a very, very, very minor dent where you hit the person in the head, but it would kill. You would literally kill somebody. So if you don't think that WWE over the years has gotten gimmick chairs from manufacturers of saying, don't put steel, put a bendable, less solid metal on the seat.
Right.
You're kidding yourself. So I think that they clearly did that here and tried to protect Cody to the best of their ability. And I don't think Cody put his life on the line here, but regardless if it's gimmicked metal or not, it's still not a great thing to do. As you said, on a weekly basis, I would want it when it's a feud that like really, really, really warrants it. The chair is as safe as it possibly can be. Even if it doesn't look like a real chair, I don't care. I mean, I'd rather have it the performers be safe than have them try to kill themselves over something that they want to make sure looks real. So I applaud Cody, but again, I'm not for concussions, so I'm kind of with you on that front.
Yeah, and one last point about that. I think the spot that Darby Allin took, that no-look backdrop onto their apron, was way more dangerous and more life-threatening down the road, if you want to be real about it, and more just not needed than the chair shot was. So just my take, because when I saw him do that, I cringed, and I had to cover my face because I just couldn't look. It's like, I was like, oh my gosh, he just broke his back.
Yeah.
It was brutal.
True. Yeah. When you think about it, like a spot like that has got infinitely more risk, I think, at times, because that's something that has very little room for error.
If he was off by 2 inches, done.
Think about
either
it.
Way.
I mean, you're paralyzed.
Yeah.
Here. I mean, so yeah, you're right. I mean, but as a whole too, you could say that wrestlers are putting their lives on the line every single day that they come out, and they could get, a broken neck from a simple clothesline or something simple. And so I don't think people realize that as well. So yeah, that spot made me very uncomfortable too, but, I don't know. AEW is doing what they can to get themselves noticed, as they should. And October is going to be crazy if you're a wrestling fan. Like, think about what
yes.
is happening. Yes, AEW is having their weekly show debut. So it's I don't think going to be Monday Night Wars Part 2, but it's going to be interesting to see how AEW differentiates themselves, how they step up their game, what they do to present their product in a different way from WWE as the alternative. On the flip side, you have WWE, who has their massive, massive, extremely lucrative deal with Fox happening in October. How do they step up their game to satisfy the Fox executives, to make sure they don't get put on FS1, to make sure that they're satisfying stockholders and shareholders, and they're keeping the interest of fans and having ratings not tank? And you have football also in full swing at that point, too. I mean, so
right.
there's just
so much
happening. Like, the October is going to be a time that I think will be the beginning point of a very long and awesome time as a wrestling fan, because competition is a very good thing in any industry, especially when it's in the wrestling industry. And if WWE says, oh, we don't look at AEW as true competition, nonsense. Nonsense. They are not shaking in their boots, and they shouldn't be, because they have infinitely more resources than AEW and all of that, and that's wonderful. They have a much larger footprint. They have a much larger audience for now, but they cannot just brush off AEW as non-competitive and this little pissant company, as Triple H like to label them as. They need to take a serious look and say, hey, they're not a threat now, but will they be? And what do we need to do to make sure that they don't ever take away our fan base?
Definitely. Yeah, I'm so looking forward to the next 6 months. It's unbelievable, and it's not that far off now. So very excited to see what brings us to that point, and just what both companies do, and other companies as well, but mainly, you know, AEW and WWE, what they do to get us to that point. So definitely be exciting.
It will be, and it will also be exciting because cooler weather comes in October, and I'm looking forward to that. not snow and cold that lasts for 6 to 8 months up here. It's kind of like 75 degrees and sunny. You know, that country song, Sunny in 75, that's kind of where I'm living at. So, well, Ashley, look, I am super jealous that you'll be going to Tampa next week. send me your photos. If you see Santino Marella, and that happens, we can take credit for that happening, because you heard it first in the show that Santino Marella is going to be the reason for the spot with the 24/7 championship, because I think that's a hell of an idea. But I'm super jealous, and you'll have to definitely let me know how everything goes, and maybe let me know how things go in person, because sometimes in person gives a different perspective than watching at home.
Oh, yeah, I definitely will. After the show, maybe that next day I'll follow up with you and kind of give you a rundown of, you know, what my perspective was, you know, being in the crowd and everything. But yeah, man, I'm super lucky and super fortunate to be able to be going, and to my boss for allowing me to take 2 days off of work on very short notice. So I got very lucky, so I'm super excited.
All jealousy here. I mean, all jealousy. I mean, if I didn't have a 1-year-old at home and all of that, man, I'd be on that flight, and I'd probably be down there with you. When I saw that, it just got dropped. I'm like, oh my God, where is it? I'm like, if it's in New York, if it's near Boston, like if it's anywhere within like a 200 and 300 mile radius, I'm going.
Yeah.
And it's like in Tampa. I'm like, damn it. Well, listen, enjoy your time. Try to stay cool. And before you go, though, let everyone know where they can find you on social media.
Yeah. Thank you so much. I'm on Twitter at ASHMANNS. So go ahead and give me a follow, and we can talk some wrestling.
And she definitely will talk wrestling with you. That's not just a line. She will. Ashley, like, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining me and taking the time out of your evening and joining me on the show. And enjoy the Raw reunion. And when Stone Cold comes out, I will be cheering at home. He's my favorite of all time, so I'm super jealous you get to see him live and Hogan and whoever else shows up. So enjoy your time and enjoy your night, and thanks again for coming on.
I will. Thank you so much for having me. We'll be talking soon.
Absolutely. Take care.
Take care. You too.
All right. Bye. Are you looking for a new podcast? Check out the Giant Voices podcast. My friend Carson Jones has on celebrities and entrepreneurs that have worked with huge brands like the NBA, Terrell Owens, and the host has worked with athletes like Arian Foster, Dennis Rodman, and others. Giant Voices has the experts and entertainment factor that will entertain but also teach you how the world of podcasting works. Check out Giant Voices on Apple, Spotify, or anywhere podcasts can be found.